It's the Growler with BD and Jay. Here to analyze for you today. From Growler Bed to Jay's Got Stats. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Growler Podcast.
Jay Morrison, how beautiful was that new Bengals Boys theme song?
It's awesome. I'm just, are you Peaches and I'm Herb, or am I Peaches and you're Herb?
I'm not sure, but we make damn good music together. Do we not? This is, I tell you, we're sitting here talking before the show, and I'm like, look at this. Back in the saddle, going through the prep together, getting all our stuff ready. This is what I have been thinking about and what I have been asked most about over the last year, maybe, than anything else. It's like, how can you get back with, you and Jay got to get back on the podcast together, right? Said, don't I know it, right? And now here we are.
Here we are.
Under the Growler purview, our new launch here to get me and you back together doing a weekly Bengals podcast. I am so excited. I'm pumped that we could make it happen and that you're back here with me.
I love it. I love the show I've been doing. I've been loving the old podcast. I don't want to even say the name. I don't know if we're allowed to say the name, but this is great. The more time that we can spend together, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
I love it. So, you know, there's a trailer up now. If people want to go listen to kind of the Growler concept, which is, again, it's Mo and Dave Ninemitz and myself, Balds Don't Lie, every Monday. You guys got used to that show this past year. And then it's me and Jay here, kind of with the Beat Writer show. You guys know what it is. If you've been around, you remember what Jay and I do and how it goes together. Jay's got stats, Arby's, lots of stories about sneaking into the Anthrax concert, the Hamilton Fairgrounds. You know what it is. So that's going to be a Wednesday show. And then Who Day Light every Friday, myself, comedian Mark Chalifoe. I'm super excited about adding that to the mix. And so three times a week, we're going to have you covered with the Growler. But this is kind of, you know, the old school. The Growler is sort of the baby of HTPG, if you will. That's just why I liked the name. But it's like, you know, when the kid ends up being better than the dad, Ken Griffey Jr. maybe.
Yeah.
And so, hey, love the dad, great player, but have you seen the swing on Jr.? It's kind of the way that I feel like the Growler is going to be now. And it's obviously going to grow as we get through this part of the season. And once we hit next season, man, I'm excited to see where everything's going to be at. We're going to get this thing humming.
Yeah. I can't wait. And shout out, as an homage to Dave Ninemitz, who you were doing the show with before and still are, the day of or the day after I was let go at The Athletic, you, Justin Williams, C. Trent, Dave Ninemitz, you guys all took me out. Dave was kind enough to bring a gift, and what he brought me was a Slipknot t-shirt. So I am wearing that today in honor of Dave. Not that I don't wear it all the time, but
no, of course. No, I mean, it's like, it's what you sleep in, I imagine. Just you put the headphones on, let Slipknot hammer in your ears and just float away into sweet dreams. Of course you do. Anyway, so thanks to thanks to the Bengals Boys for our sweet intro. Who they're back. They did all the intros for all these songs, killing it. Thanks to our new group, Multitude, that we are working with, who's helping get this whole thing rocking. And we'll listen to you if you have a business or something and you want to, hey, man, I'm in for being part of Paul and Jay's brand. I'd love to be part of it. Hey, hit me up and we'll get you in contact with our people and we'll rock this thing. I love finding any local partners that are interested, but we're doing it. We're here doing Bengals, and so you know what that means. So here we go. Episode one is fresh off sort of the week in Indianapolis last week. And I think it's good to start with the fact that you just hear stuff, and some of it is predictable, some of it is not. So I got four categories here, and let's just pick what we think lands under the idea of the thing we heard felt this way. Let's throw it to you first. What do you think was one of the most impactful thoughts and things that you heard last week in Indianapolis?
Yeah, it was more of a confirmation, I guess, than a breaking news kind of thing. But we talked to offensive line coach Frank Pollock Wednesday afternoon, and he was talking about, number one, the difficulty of starting a rookie tackle, and number two, where you can get the really good ones and where it's a crapshoot. And he called it a line of demarcation. He said, if you don't get one in the first 12 picks, there's really no difference between 13 to 32. And everybody knows the Bengals are not in the top 12. They're at 18, and they rarely trade up in the first round. So it almost cemented the case that, yes, they're going to go get somebody in free agency that can be the day one starter. And then maybe the number 18 pick, if it is an offensive tackle, still think defensive tackle might be more likely, but if it is an offensive tackle, that guy's going to have every chance to beat out the veteran, but you need to have that backup plan there. Given what Frank said with the line of demarcation, also given this organization's history of drafting offensive linemen, backup plans are always a good idea.
It's a great point. And that was something I heard a couple of times. I had one league person tell me, you know, where the Bengals are at 18, you'd probably rather even be at 28, you know, if there was, and so I think the idea of trading back is interesting, because under the exact same thing of what Frank said, and that is, what's the difference? And the Bengals could use adding a pick or two, especially there's your capital. There's your draft capital, man. Like, if you're sitting there at 18 and you can move back into the mid 20s and add a late two, early three with one of those teams, that's real appetizing. You know, however you can make the math, or maybe there's a player that could get involved or something like that. And you mentioned me, they don't move up, but it made me start to feel like, okay, just the more you hear about it, the more people, because it's the same thing. How many first round grade players are there, right? There aren't 32. And usually you hear somewhere, you know, 14 is a typical, like, it's usually about half.
Yeah.
And some years there's a little more. Well, I felt like Frank spilled how many first round grades they have a little bit. He's like, look, there's 12 of them. And so what's the difference after that? And I think there is. And I think some of those guys could slip, and they're certainly going to be sitting there wanting all the quarterbacks to come off the board. And you're going to want to see what all those offensive linemen means. You know, does that make some of them slip down the board, or will it just be, I mean, there's a chance we see the whole top 10 go off with all offense between quarterbacks, the offensive linemen, and the receivers.
Receivers, yep.
So, I mean, those three dudes we know are going to go off in the top 10. I mean, you assume. And so what's left after that? You start talking about corner, you start talking about Bowers, you start talking about what's happening with Byron Murphy. You've got some edge, good edge people, but can they make it all the way to 18? And if they're not, none of those guys are there. I think the Bengals are certainly listening. We know trade back. I would still be flabbergasted, Jay, if they traded up. It's just, they just don't do it. And Duke is not giving up picks. Like, he just hates, he was flogging himself over, like, giving up a five. When he moved up three spots, the Cam Taylor Britt year, he's like, oh, I just hate it. You know, it's the last thing that he wants to do. So for that fact, I don't see that as likely, but it did open my eyes to, it sure does seem like they would be having real thoughts about maybe moving back and using that to add picks.
And 18 is a weird spot. I went all the way back to 2010 and looked to see how many times pick number 18 was used in a draft day trade. And there's only been four times in the last 13 drafts or 14 drafts. The last two were kind of weird situation. 2022 was the AJ Brown trade. So you're talking about an established player pairing with picks. 2020, same thing. That was the Minka Fitzpatrick trade, Dolphins and Steelers. And so the last time you had a true trade down with an 18 pick was Seattle traded 18 and a seventh rounder to Green Bay, and they went all the way back to 27, and they added an extra third, which was 76, and an extra sixth, which was 186. So that would be, you know, that's upper third pick in the third round is what you could be looking for if you're willing to move back. I don't know, maybe 18 to 28, 18 to 27, maybe that's right in the wheelhouse where the Bengals would be looking.
And, you know, you can also do a search of great players that have been picked between 17 and 20, and you'll find some pretty awesome names. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just, you got to be comfortable that somebody that you have, you know, it's a good chance to find somebody that maybe your staff believes in more than most of the league is where you end up there, you know, because the consensus probably is 12. But what are those extra three or four that maybe you would give a first round grade to that not a lot of other teams did, that because they fit you particularly well? And I think that's what you end up with 18, and that's where you hope to be Minnesota drafting Justin Jefferson, right? Like, you just like, oh man, look what fell into our laps here, and hope that it works out for you. So I do think that's interesting. Is this is where you start to get a good feel for how the rest of the league is viewing the true blue chips. And I do think you were getting a feel that nobody thinks there's 18 first round grade guys in this draft. Mine would probably be the state of the T. Higgins situation, in that, one, I thought there would be more movement in the conversations being had behind closed. I thought you'd hear more about potential teams that are interested. There wasn't a lot, you know. If you're anybody I talked to, I know you weren't hearing much about teams that are interested in that. And that stuff can pop out of nowhere. I mean, Orlando Brown in free agency, right? I mean, just like, oh, somebody walks down the hallway and says, hey, do you think you have interest in Orlando Brown on the Tuesday of the league here? Like, it can happen. Where you don't see it coming. But I thought there would be a little bit more scuttle about team interest and potential trade. There really wasn't. It just really felt like everybody kind of knows where this is going, and that's, you would have to totally blow the Bengals away to actually acquire T. Higgins. They tagged him because they want to go for it this year with him at 21.8, kind of the end. And Duke and Zach certainly did not want to put anything out there to detract teams from talking to them and bringing any offers and anything that might be going on the other side with T and his people. So they're not going to say anything, but I thought the vagueness of what they were doing was just that, of might as well keep the possibility open. And it sounded from those that I talked to that that's kind of how the rest of the league viewed it too, is they're just keeping the possibility that someone does something crazy open to them. But for the most part, everybody feels like they know where this thing ends. And that's with 5-1-9 rolling out there in the opener.
Yeah. And that was kind of the reaction to those interviews on Tuesday, was people were maybe thinking, oh, they want to trade T, and that is not the case at all. It's just, like you said, it has to be an offer that's going to blow them away. They talked about it. They tagged him for a reason. They want him here. They want him to play here this year. And it just wasn't as staunch as last year, where if you want a guy, go get your own. That, yeah, if someone wants to offer a crazy deal, they would take that. But I think the quote that stood out to me the most about that was when Duke said, a bird in the hand. Like, they know what they have in T. Higgins. Even if you get a great offer and you say you're going to go draft a wide receiver in the first round or whatever it is, you just, even if you have first round grades on guys, it's still a crapshoot. You just never know, number one, how the guy's going to pan out, how he's going to fit in the locker room. They love everything about T, from his production to his work ethic to how he meshes with this group, the anti-diva attitude that he and Chase, going all the way back to the AJ Green era. It was a little surprising at first, the way they kind of left that crack, but it made sense, because they don't want to dissuade teams from who maybe are starving for a guy like T. Higgins to come blow them away with an offer.
Yeah, totally agree. All right, let's go next to maybe the thing that most made you form a new Bengals take. What do you got?
You know, so going to the combine, I think we were all the same mindset that they were, Joe Mixon is, there was a sliver of a chance that you never say never, that we all felt the cut is coming, but there was, you never know. Mike Brown's got this loyalty. I think he's got a soft spot in his heart for Joe Mixon. But the way Duke and Zach were talking, it was almost like a tribute video kind of thing. Like if Joe comes back with another team. And the question to Duke or to Zach, if I remember right, was posed in the past. Like what has Joe meant to you? So he went with that. But it was surprising how much they Duke always falls on the, well, he's under contract and we'll see what happens. And it didn't feel like he was going that way with it, where he was kind of doing the same thing, just thanking Joe for all he's done for them. And it felt maybe 15%, I would say, going into the combine chance that Joe would be back. And it feels like that's under 10% now. Never say never. You never know. But I was a little surprised that the way they addressed it, where they didn't just kind of leave it open. And Duke did say, I'm not going to get into how we build the roster and philosophy and all that, but they said enough to make it seem even more likely that they're going to part ways with Joe.
Yeah. I mean, there was no defending, you know, we think Joe is still a great back in this league. We obviously would want him back, which are things that you do hear about other players. You know, we heard that about DJ Reader. We heard that about, you know, and a guy who you should have similar questions about in terms of how much can you still get out of DJ Reader. But, you know, that wasn't the message that was put out there about Joe Mixon. So for that reason, I would agree with you. I still also believe that they're not lying, in that I don't think that decision has been finalized. It obviously hasn't. It's not out there yet. But I just think they still it still has to make its way to the final decision-making stamp. And until that happens, I'm just not going to say anything for certain, because, again, last year we certainly felt like that's the direction it could go or would go. And so, but you know, the March 17th, that your $3 million roster bonus day does approach. So we know when we're going to know by, but I think that was the only thing, was there was an impression there of, well, the paperwork hasn't been signed. The decision hasn't been verbalized that it's final yet. It is kind of, I think, the one thing where you keep that in your back pocket of, no matter what we're hearing from people or what they're saying in front of us or to anybody else, that, you know, that still kind of hangs out there. So that was my only other side of the Mixon thing. Otherwise, I mean, I've written, it's out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Duke said that clause is in the contract per Joe's agent's request, and the Bengals wanted it in there. And it's 4 days. They will have 4 days to sign a running back in free agency before they have to make that decision. So, yeah, that final decision could be based on what happens in free agency. If they don't end up getting anybody, maybe it's worth the $3 million to keep Joe around, because you don't know how the draft is going to play out either. We saw that last year. We thought for sure going to take a tight end. Didn't work out that way. So I think if they get somebody they feel really good about in free agency, then that will cement the decision.
Make it easier for, certainly. You could see that happening. But nobody, the reason that's there is nobody wanted to replicate what happened last offseason, where it just went on and on. It was in the news, and it's just like, ugh, it was not good for anyone the way it went down last year. And it left the Bengals kind of sitting there a little bit. Over the course of that time, not really making a move when maybe they could have in the summer, because there was uncertainty about what exactly was happening. But anyway, I'm with you on that. Mine was kind of all about the defensive back conversation. It certainly, I mean, Dax Hill is not somebody that we haven't discussed. And I know that we've all talked a lot about what are they going to do with him. But I just thought about how clear it was. Like, we are, you know what it was, Jay, about it, the whole thing to me? They felt like a team with something up their sleeve. Like, it just felt like they have some, we're in the process, seeing how it plays out, not going to commit to anything. It felt like they've got some ideas and they've got some things they might want to do. And they don't want to go saying anything until they see what happens, if something better comes along. So there's a couple of different things there, right? I mean, there's maybe they're obviously going to be looking around the free agent safety market. That's not necessarily a shock, but I think you can take it as if they can find somebody better, and then maybe that's when they move Dax to another position to make them feel like they're getting more out of him, knowing that they only want him to do one spot. Maybe it's something creative, you know? And again, this is something I'll just say off the cuff when I'm talking about creative, and this is not anything that anybody mentioned to me, but like, who knows? Maybe Carolina's like, we could get you Von Bell back. We got new coaching staff here that they don't want to invest in safeties and they're trying to clear cap. Like, again, that's not something I'm saying like I heard or anything, but you never know what kind of creative stuff that could be happening behind scenes somewhere. They could be trying to find ways. Guys are getting cut. Well, Marcus May just got cut. And these other, Kevin Byard got cut. There's a ton of safeties out there. So they could be waiting on that. I mean, go back to Von Bell showing up in the first place. The reason he's in Cincinnati was they never thought there was any chance in hell he would be available. And next thing they know, they're sitting there on day whatever of free agency saying, how is Von Bell still out there? And it turns out there was issues with him and his people and the Saints people. And the Bengals swooped in and scooped. And he came right in and helped change the face of their defense in that position. So I think they're looking, okay? Maybe the more surprising part about it is kind of, I think the cornerback element is in there too. With what is DJ Turner? Like, is he the guy? They really like him. I mean, Duke lit up like a Christmas tree talking about him. But you heard Lou Anarumo like, and DJ Turner's just got to be better. I mean, the Mike Hilton line he used of, you know, he didn't just hit the rookie wall. The rookie wall hit him. And pointing out that it's got to be better from that spot. And so sounded like somebody who'd like to see some more competition, and they need another corner over there anyway. I just think all of that, they're looking. I think they're very aggressively saying this back end was a problem. If we can find some veterans that are good communicators, that have that savvy, it could be a direction they're willing to go. I will let you guys be the judge real quick. And then Jay, you can kind of come back and talk off that for a second. But here is Duke and Lou Anarumo from the combine talking a little bit about this situation.
Yeah, we like both those young players, and they're both pretty versatile, which you know is a positive when you're playing in the backfield. You know, Dax is really versatile, so finding the best role for him to maximize his skill set would be something that you know we're working on this offseason, and how best to utilize him to show off his range and his size and his speed and his toughness and all the things that he has. Same thing with Jordan. What's the best role for him, and how does he fit within the defense? And who's the communicator? And all those things are things that we go through in the offseason, and that Coach Lou will try to fit together the best that we can. But both those players are young, talented, and have shown that they belong in this league.
Did you learn anything, Duke, from the Vaughn-Jesse experience happening simultaneously last year?
I don't know that I learned anything. You know, you have to reboot sometimes, and that's just the way this league is. And not everybody stays. You can compete to keep guys, and sometimes they leave and you move on. And we're not a team that has been the only one dealing with that. There are other teams dealing with that. It seems like the system is set up to encourage players to move around, and we try to combat that, but it doesn't always work. And so we're prepared to go forward with other guys when that happens.
Could Dax move to corner? Is that an option for you guys on the table?
Yeah, I wouldn't go into all of the off-season plans, but Dax can play corner, Dax can play nickel, Dax can play free safety, and Dax can play strong safety. And just finding the best fit, that'll be up to our defensive coaching staff and Zach to determine, you know, where can this guy help us the most win football games. He can do an awful lot, and we're happy to have him.
Young guys on the back end, how do you think that they, when you went back and like, how do you think that they did? Obviously, you have a lot of young youth back there.
Yeah, I think they played like young guys. And, you know, we all wanted it to be better players, coaches, for sure. Again, there was things that were really good at times, but it goes back to it just wasn't consistent enough. And, you know, next year will be better for sure.
What's Dax's spot next year? Is he safety, or is that something that you're open to moving?
Yeah, I mean, we're still looking at everything. I think we look at not just Dax, but everybody last year. Yeah. When you have a year where it wasn't quite up to standard, I think it's just something that you evaluate, and, hey, is this guy going to be better here or there, but not anything in particular there.
He can do all of it, so it gives you the options of considering things, I guess, right? I mean,
well,
just because he's so freaky physically, you know.
Yeah, I think he, you know, it's you got to. He's got to be good at one thing, and so that's what we're working on now is being good at one thing. So,
how important? It's the one. How important is that for a young guy to have him in the one spot? You know, he's athletic to maybe try all these different things, but to get him to be a master at one versus a.
Well, again, I think it's a. Let's go back a little bit. You know, he's still a young player in a lot of regards. He was only his second year, played a handful of snaps his first year. So I think his development and his upside is still huge, and nobody's down on the guy at all. We just have to make sure that he's honed in and making sure he's being able to do the things that we're asking him to do, wherever that may be.
I think the line that stood out the most to me was Lou saying he's got to do one thing good. And you can't just have him be this positionless player and move him around. And so is it another change? I don't think that's best. Yes, he wasn't what he needed to be last year, but it felt like there was nothing physical involved there. It was learning the position. It was learning his 10 games with Nick Scott and then 7 with Jordan Battle, and it just trying to get his bearings. And it just seems like you're going to stunt his growth again if you move him to another position. That was a problem rookie year where he was playing all over the place while Jesse Bates was out. I don't know. To me, I wouldn't. And another reason they could be vague, not so much that they don't know, they don't want to tip their hand in any way in which way they're going to go in free agency, which way they're going to go in draft. You can kind of see where the dominoes fall if they were to commit now to where he was going to be. The one thing Lou did say is no, that he's not going to be the slot corner. That's Mike Hilton's job. They would not consider moving him to play safety, even though he does line up in a safety role at times. But it just it feels like he deserves another year at safety and see if him and Jordan can start building some of that camaraderie and chemistry and getting rid of all these explosives, which most of them were mental and communication based and not physical failings.
You cannot go that route without some kind of a insurance policy,
right?
A quality veteran safety that is pushing him, maybe competing with him for that spot. If you are going to keep him, we can talk about youth and Lord knows we did ad nauseum, but I don't know how you can say a guy who played more snaps than anybody in the regular season, over 1,000 snaps last year, and by the end of it was making day one errors that were called out by the coaching staff, that you're confident that it'll be better when he just has the next 7 months to think about it. And I'm here to bet on development, and I'm buying the, young guys make mistakes stuff. I am. But if it's a, if they feel like it's a thing where the load in game that is put on that position is one of the highest mentally of everything. And this is not, it's it. Some guys just don't do as well with that. And that was part of the projection with Dax. That's not saying anything about him as a player or football player or anything. If they feel like it's simpler for him to use his athleticism to say, go cover this guy, see if you can do this through an offseason program, through camp, dig into that. We think that could be the best place for you to get the most out of who you are. Then maybe that's what it is. And I mean, they think he can do it. The day he was drafted, that was said about him. You just heard Duke Tobin say he can play outside corner. He can play nickel. I've heard that every step of the way with Dax Hill. That's the way they view him as a possibility down the line. They would prefer him to be safety. One of the harder parts about it, Jay, I think they might have three guys whose best position is nickel. DJ Turner might be that best at nickel. The same with Dax and obviously with Mike Hilton. And it becomes a little bit of a logjam in that regard. Well, how do you make all of this necessarily work? And I think that truly is something that they're trying to work through.
And does that mean we see more team periods and 11-on-11 periods in OTAs? Because there hasn't been a lot of that. And that's something you can't wait to training camp to start figuring it out. They've got to start working on it in this spring.
At a certain point, I mean, you know, this is the problem with it, right? Is that you can do it all you want when you got your veteran team that goes out there and you play well. But if you're going to talk about how communication and youth and all of these things were what cost you last season, well, then you can't waste those opportunities. Hmm. Like, I'm all for their philosophy of keeping guys fresh or whatever, but how about a couple of 7-on-7 reps for the starters over the course of the entire OTAs? And there weren't any. I mean, and so you that aren't walkthrough mode. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like, really try, really gives something. I mean, do we really think that 20 plays on June 8th is going to have them tired on December 18th? I'm not saying do it every day. I'm not saying you're doing it for hours at a time. I ain't got them out there pushing sleds, but you can run some 7-on-7 a little more full speed with your kids. And so I thought you asked that. That was a great question. And one that I think everybody has there in the back of their mind with however this thing lands. We could go into that more. I'm sure we will. We'll be dissecting it till we're blue in the face, but it certainly to me, it now becomes the most interesting part of free agency, because I think we know they're going to be aggressively attacking the interior defensive line. We know they're going to be in the right tackle market. Like, these are things I feel like the safety, maybe even corner, but safety thing is the one thing that can really change the direction of where they're going defensively over the course of the entire offseason. So, fun thing to watch. All right, next category. What was the most surprising thing for you, Jay?
Well, I don't know. I know you're going to touch on Osai. I was the opposite of that, where last year at this time, they were all talking about Zach Carter making this huge leap. Mm. And he changed positions. He adjusted his body. I mean, when Lou was running through his D line, he didn't even mention Zach Carter's name. Now, maybe he forgot. Maybe it could have been, but it surprised me that there was zero mention of him, because it's their biggest hole. I mean, he's a guy in the interior of the D line that you have under contract for 2 more years, and you're talking about how you need to rebuild that position. And Lou talked about it at every position, at every spot, where the young guys, they believe in him and they like the direction they're going. And for him to not even mention Zach Carter, that surprised me. And like I said, it could be an omission. Maybe he thought he'd already said his name or what it was, but it stood out to me, where I even went back and listened again. Like, did I hear that right? Did he forget him? And he did forget him, or left him out on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, I think they feel like they fought the good fight with Zach Carter. I mean, I was team Zach Carter this time last year. He was doing all right. He really cared. He changed his body. There was a lot of reason to believe that he would come in and become the player they thought he would be. And he even self-admittedly said he didn't do that. And I, you don't need anybody else to tell you that if you watched any of the games. I mean, he never became that. And I think they just don't think it's going to happen for him. And if it does, it's a pleasant. He's there. He is under contract, but he's fighting for his roster spot. You know, I don't, he's certainly not safe because I expect to see a lot of new faces in that room, and that could push him all the way out. And I think they view it as like, look, if he does something because he's feeling the pressure and it turns him into a better player out of nowhere, cool. But they're not counting on it for a second. It's kind of what all that, because I feel the same way as you. Like, I don't think he's even thought of as part of the conversation. I've never really heard his name really come up anymore. Whereas last year, it was the biggest risky bet they made. They bet on the development of Zach Carter, and it failed him in a big way. Mine was Joseph Osai being mentioned in positive terms. It was unbelievable. I was like, wait, did you just say Joseph Osai? He really excited about him, and he's there every day. And he repeated, every day, he's there. He's healthy. He's not rehabbing anything. I'm so excited to see it. And I'm like, I didn't even know this dude was allowed to, like, be in your eyesight for fear of some physical attack. Like, it's unbelievable. Everybody said, what's going on with Joseph Osai? And it's always been like, I don't know. It just seems like Lou's just not feeling him. And it does usually go back to the injury stuff. And maybe he kind of got caught wind of how it looks like he's really put Joe in the doghouse. But it was the other way for the first time. And so I thought that was interesting. Maybe he was just his way of saying, hey, Joseph Osai, I see you. I see you being present. I see you doing the right things. And more of that, please. Maybe that's all that was, because it was pretty unsolicited. I don't think, like, we've tried to ask Lou about it so many times. I don't even think we're just worn out by it anymore. Like, what's going on with Joseph Osai? He just gives the same spiel, but this time he just kind of threw it out there. And so that was pretty, it's not huge, but I was like, whoa, that wasn't expecting to hear that. I wasn't expecting to hear that.
The total pivot. And I mean, all the guys that are there every day are guys that are rehabbing stuff, basically. And for him to say he's there and he's not working on anything, it spoke volumes.
That's another part of free agency. These guys are under, like, DJ Reader's there all the time now, and other guys that are hurt. Once you're a free agent, you can't come in the building anymore, which is interesting with Reader, because if he's rehabbing now, I mean, he can go anywhere rehab, but, like, there's a lot of comfort in being there and being around those people, help you through injury rehab, and he's using the tubs and whatever. So, like, anyway, I thought that's kind of an interesting part of Reader, which I know we'll talk about him in a little bit, but as he goes in through a very uncertain free agency period. All right, last one here. Which thing made you want to open a spreadsheet? This is just for you, Jay. I know everything kind of makes you want to open a spreadsheet, but what one really made you want to open a spreadsheet?
So it made me want to, but I have not yet. So, and actually not open one, but create one. But I want to take a look, and maybe we'll have this on the next episode. But the history of wide receivers that have played under the franchise tag, what their numbers look like the year before the tag, on the tag, and then after the tag. And, you know, T's got a great chance to shoot his numbers up, just because he missed so many games due to injury last year. But, you know, they don't like being tagged. They don't like the whole process. And does that affect performance? I don't think it will with T, but I am interested to see what history says about that.
It's a great question. I mean, it's the ultimate contract year. If you're worthy as a receiver of being paid that kind of 1 year money, you certainly know what you're worthy of getting the next year when you hit the open market potentially. And for him, you know, I think a lot of this is going to tie back to, you know, can he just go play a full healthy season and play 1,000 snaps or whatever, get over 900. I mean, he could use that, you know, the same way we used to talk about Jonah Williams that way. Like, he just needed to play a full healthy season. And Jonah admitted that at one point, like, I just want to stay healthy through a full year. And he really reversed that trend. I mean, he became kind of a stable, available guy, but I do believe that, you know, availability is a big reason why the Bengals have been unwilling to go there with T in the long-term range. I think that's a significant part of their decision-making process here. And so for any team to be looking at him, I think that's something that to me, that would be the most important number for him next year, more than any number that he could put up, would be how many snaps he played. All right, for the next one, I would say it would be, can't wait to put all these combine size numbers and power numbers in, because sure heard a lot about, you know, needing to be bigger and stronger and more powerful in the trenches. And we know they've leaned that way offensively, on the offensive line in particular, in recent years. And it really feels like that's the direction that they want to go with anybody they're adding. But in specifically that right tackle position, is looking for the just big, strong, powerful Orlando Brown type, even if overly, because it's all about certain types of pockets. For that, I want to bring in Dan Pitcher, who kind of talked about some of this offensive line stuff and the idea of the bigger guys and where that group is at. And so we'll hear Dan and kind of come back and talk a little bit about what he had to say.
Is there room to grow there? Absolutely. But you can say that about every single position. We love the makeup of those guys. We love the character. We love the toughness. We love the want to. And it's our job as coaches to put them in the best positions so that we as an offense can have success. And I feel really good about that. I think, you know, Frank's done a great job assessing last year, taking a look at, you know, what do we do in the run game moving forward. We got a same thing on offense or on the pass game now. We got to decide, you know, maybe what are some things protection-wise that we can do that give us more chances to create those explosive plays. But I think that the line as a whole played well. Can we get better? Absolutely. And I know those guys are working hard right now to do that.
I think that you guys have really leaned into the bigger, more powerful offensive linemen, you know.
Yeah.
Is that, when you assess things, is that something that you still look at and say, I still think that is where we're at our best, or do you reevaluate that and maybe we should open ourselves up to more, a little bit smaller, more athletic types?
I think when you have an elite quarterback, which we have, first and foremost, you solidify the pocket. How do you solidify the pocket? You solidify it with strong, tough interior three that are smart, that can pass off games, that can pick up pressure packages, and we have that. We've done that. And so if that's step one, then you decide what do those guys do well in the other phases of the offense. And I believe that that's the intelligent way to go about constructing our roster based on the quarterback that we have. Does that mean that we can't squeeze more out in certain areas? No, we're going to try to squeeze everything we can. But I think you got to be careful not to just think that the grass is always greener. Well, we got to get more athletic. Well, you get more athletic, and then you give up more push in the pocket. Well, we got to solidify the center of the pocket. Okay, so now you get a little less athletic. There's not a bunch of guys walking around that are great at everything. That's the reality that we're faced with. That's why we're here. We're trying to find those guys. Those guys get picked in the first round. And hopefully we got an opportunity to add some of those guys. But I feel good about, you know, how we built that unit and how we're going to be able to move forward.
How valuable? What do you think when you come? I don't know how much deep you've looked at the tackles yet. But when you have a class like this where there's like eight of these massive dudes that everybody wants, it's like,
yeah,
it's got to be refreshing to know, because there's been a scarcity in the league until those.
Sure, sure, yeah. You know, I think I'm really now kind of just diving into that, and you know, what I've seen so far is encouraging. I think there's going to be, you know, at least a handful of guys at that position that are going to be good pros. I also know projecting success at that position. First of all, projecting success at any position, if you have the formula, give it to me, because I can give this job up and make a ton of money. But particularly that position, the physicality comes with that, you know, of lining up against, you know, you look at our division and, you know, the Cam Haywards of the world, the Myles Garretts, the TJ Watts, you know, like, they're not playing those guys. Even in the SEC, they're not playing those guys. So, all that being said, is it a promising group? I believe so.
You hear it there. They're all projections, but, you know, the common I think, criticism that the Bengals have received in their drafting failures of offensive linemen, and we've certainly levied them. If people look at it now and say they're not getting athletic enough guys, they're getting these big guys that have had terrible RAS scores, you know, Math Bomb's going to be crushing them and twirling his mustache. And that's true. Like, I mean, they have Orlando Brown, who had one of the, I mean, that drags him down. He had like one of the worst combine scores ever. And guys that maybe weren't considered the greatest athletes, but then you hear their other side of it is that they believe the bigger, stronger, anchored, powerful guys, maybe not as athletic, are a better fit for Joe Burrow. And that's why they're leaning that way. And so that's kind of the other side of their explanation of why, when you look at a lot of the guys that they take, they're not going to be lighting it up. You're not going to be admiring the offensive lineman 40 or shuttle time and all that stuff. And maybe that's their fault. Maybe it's the reason why a lot of these guys are busting, but that's where their philosophy is right now.
And if you even look beyond the draft, if you look at free agency, there's a 6'7", 360-pound free agent who has played for Frank Pollock before. Mekhi Becton, he's got the T. Higgins issue. The availability thing is a question, but he is a guy that would seem to fit what they're looking for prototype-wise. But, yeah, I get what he's saying. Well, you know, the grass isn't always greener on the other side. And what suits Joe Burrow the best? And he's had the calf injury. He's had the other injuries. But he's still a very mobile quarterback. And going that route, just doing what you do well, building it a certain way, I think is the way to go. And like he said, those guys that can do it all are in the first round. And as Frank said, well, yeah, they're in the first round, but they're in the first 12 picks of the first round, and they're not picking in the first 12 picks of the first round.
Maybe. You never know. Maybe one of their guys, maybe they're sitting on one of their guys that they think will be there and slip down to them. But either way, yeah. I mean, there's a ton that certainly you could make a pretty good case for being what they're looking for, both being athletic and being massive hulking guys. And I think that's where you can maybe could be there in. That's where somebody that's a better fit for them, but not for the rest of the league, could end up at 18. And if that's, you know, where it goes. And so who knows? Plenty of time between now and then, but a little bit more insight into, you know, the offensive line situation. All right. Well, we wouldn't be back together if we couldn't do some Jay's Got Stats time. Right. I'm ready for it. I've never been more ready for anything else in my life. What do you got?
Well, I mean, we've talked about it in the past quite a bit, but the amount of draft capital they've spent on the defensive side of the ball recently, rounds 1 through 3, they've had their last 6 picks have all been defense, and it even goes beyond that, but just these last 2 years. So I was curious, what's the record for 3 years in a row most defensive guys they've taken in the first 3 rounds? And I wish I knew how they came up with this capital, but from 85 to 87, they had 12 picks that were defensive guys. They had 14 picks in rounds 1 through 3 in those 3 years, and 12 of the 14 were defensive guys. The two outliers were Tim McGee and Eddie Brown. So if you're gonna have an outlier, you better make sure you hit on him. I don't know what they were doing to acquire those extra picks back then. They currently have 3 picks in the first 3 rounds. So if they go defense again, which I don't think they will, but even if they did, they'd be sitting at 9. They'd only be 75% of the way to the record. But it would be 9 for 9 if they did go defense again.
You're making me want to pull out the media guide and go to the trades page and see.
Yeah,
Was it a Jack Thompson trade? I'm trying to think. Like, man, I got to go back to when I was 3, and I know a decent amount about those teams, but I didn't realize that they had acquired that kind of draft capital at that point in time. Here we go. That feels like an oral history of how they ended up over the course of 3 years. But good for them. Hey, and you know what happened a few years later?
That's exactly right.
Went to the Super Bowl.
And a lot of those defensive guys they took were a big part. Jason Buck, Eric Thomas, Joe Kelly, Lewis Billups, David Fulcher,
wow,
Carl Zander. Manuel wow. King. Yeah.
Legend. Almost the whole SWAT team on there. Yeah. All right. That's see the good stuff. It's so good to have that back in my life. Need a good Jay's got stats. Oh, it's good stuff. So of course, you know, we always did the growler bet, and now we're whole show's the growler. And so that has to stay. Yeah. And usually we don't do one in the off season. It's, they're harder to do. Usually about something that's going to happen that weekend. But I feel like, Jay, we are good enough to come up with bets, okay, for stuff that's going to happen in the off season over the course of any weekend that we can still do it, even if it's not in season yet. So that said, which is a good chance for us to remind everybody that, guess what? This isn't the only show that Jay and I are doing together again. The walkout's back. I mentioned that in the trailer. I want to make sure people know when we get to the season, the walkout's back. I don't have to hear from any of y'all that when y'all thought I was having a stroke because the AirPods weren't any good, I was really concerned about the state of the walkout. And so I'm glad I don't have to do the live room style walkout stuff anymore. But Jay and I back, and that one's going to be a lot of fun too. But so with the growler bet, though, it's got to stay. I was thinking a good, you know, we're pre-free agency. I thought a good one to do, because there's one particular person who it's really hard to say when he'll sign. It could be most of them, you know, it'll be in the first week or that second wave. DJ Reader is such a weird case because of his injury. You feel like a lot of people are going to be wary of that. Maybe want to see a little bit more about how he's doing. Maybe it makes him push past the second. Maybe he waits specifically to go through those waves to be able to better show his bill of health. And maybe that will help him then get the deal he feels like he deserves. So I thought, how about the day DJ Reader signs? Okay. And if you say he's going to sign in March, you got to say who signs him. So if you think the Bengals are going to sign him on the first day of free agency, then I guess that's a guess you can make. But the day that you think that DJ Reader signs and with who, maybe we're just going to end up giving out a million beers for our podcast launch here. Maybe this is too easy. Maybe he'll maybe he'll sign on Wednesday. Maybe he'll sign at 4:01. And this is the day the signing breaks. So verbal, you know, Schefter, me, Jay, whoever, puts it out there. That's when it counts. All right, Jay, do you have a thought?
I do. I'm going July 16th, the day after the franchise tag deadline passes. Not tied to the franchise tag as much. Just, I mean, if somebody's going to sign DJ Reader, he's going to have to pass a physical. As great as his rehab looks like it's going, I don't know if he can pass a physical already. That injury happened in December. It's only been 3 months. That's like a 9-month recovery typically for that injury. So if a team's going to give him a lot of money, which you would think would be the case if they're signing him early, he'd have to pass a physical. I think this is going to drag out. And I know you said if you sign in March, pick the team. I'm going to pick the Bengals as a team. I just think that's the most likely. If it goes that long, they're the ones. And I'm sure a lot of people were thrilled to see DJ Reader courtside with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and Sam Hubbard and like, oh, they're keeping the band together. I think it's going to play out. I think that's the best news for the Bengals. If it gets that long, everybody's already spent all their money. The Bengals notoriously hold money back anyhow. Maybe they hold a little bit more money back just on the off chance they are able to do something with T. I don't know, but get about a week or so, week to 2 weeks before training camp and make the move. I don't have no idea what the money, the contract is going to look like, but that's going to be my pick is July 16th with the Bengals.
I like that. That's a good one. You don't have to put the team in. You can if you hit July 16th, I don't care who it's with. You're good. You're good by me, Jay. Here's my day, because I would not, by the way, I would not be surprised if it was announced as like an offer sheet agreed to the first week of free agency. I could see some team being like, I'm going to bet on DJ being able to get healthy and give him something he says it's good enough for me. But I'm going to say April 30th. I'm going to say the Tuesday after the draft. Okay. Draft happens. DJ's doing much better. Looking like he's got the clean bill of health. Somebody didn't get who they wanted in the draft, or they everybody pushed it back and said, you know what, DJ, you get healthy. Let's let the draft pass, and we'll revisit this if we don't get what we want, and we'll pay you. And then they come back, and DJ signs after the draft. That feels like a possibility to me, as a way that people are going to want to see if they can find another option to fill a spot there. But, yeah, it's a curious case, man. I have no idea how it ends. There was a lot of flowers dropped at the feet of CJ Reader by just about everybody that we talked to, of people that would love to have him back. They know what he means. Everybody's still a little pissed off that he got hurt, and so I'm really curious to see the Bengals' aggression, but they didn't really hide it. It's the other side of the thing we were saying earlier about Mixon. Like you're not hearing that. You weren't hearing the man. We would just love to find a way to bring DJ Reader back. We hope we can. That's you know, not so much the other country, but that was being said a lot about DJ Reader, which he's beloved in that building. There's just no question. And so again, we'll see where all that falls. All right, Arby's time, right, Jay?
Yeah.
I mean, it's combine. This is like you could do a whole Arby's show after the combine. So if we can pick our best one or two, if you feel like you got to get a couple off your chest to get our Indianapolis stories out there that we are allowed to tell. Some can be just, you know, let's just keep that to ourselves. What do you got?
Well, my first one, I know a lot of reporters already put it out on social media, but I was lamenting the fact that my stay in Indy was so short. I was in Florida on a vacation. I came back Tuesday night, so I missed Zach and Duke, came over Wednesday morning, and I was leaving to go home Thursday afternoon, and I was writing my stories. I was like, it kind of sucks this year that I didn't get to go to St. Elmo's or Harry and Izzy's and get the world-famous shrimp cocktail. And then I look up, and there's girls with cameras taking video and guys in tuxedos carrying a tray around, and they had a tray full of St. Elmo's shrimp cocktail, and they were passing it out to all the media in the media room. And so I got my fix, and one was enough. It lit me up. I was like, if I'm only going to eat one, I can just scoop that stuff right up and have a, I don't know if you guys have never had it before, you got to get it. It's crazy hot. The horseradish is, it just opens your sinuses. It makes you cry. But it was a great way to end the combine, because I was wrapping up my last story. I was getting ready to hit the road, and I was kind of kicking myself for I didn't have time to go to St. Elmo's, and St. Elmo's came to me.
Unbelievable. All I'll say is this. I'll do a quick one because we got to get out of here. I was attacked by a man on a unicycle. And it was startling, and I was not prepared for it. It was early in the morning, and I was walking down to go to the Westin, and it was cold. And I'd been out late the night before, so everything's a really? Little kind of like I'm just trying to kind of get through things. And a man on a unicycle is coming full speed right at me, and he's waving his arms like he's doing, like he's practicing some kind of jousting or something, and he's weaving in and out, and I'm like, this is not good. I've never seen anything quite like this before. And he comes right at me, and then he, at the last second, wheels around me and goes over my tree and goes past me. And I was like, I was just not prepared for that. And that's kind of like how I felt. Like I'm just seeing things the whole time. Like I'm not prepared for that right now. There's so many other stories I'd love to do, but I can't. We got to wrap it up. Jay, we're back in the saddle. I'm super excited about it. We'll be back on Wednesday too, doing our show every week. So great to have you back here. Thanks to everybody for listening to this episode of The Growler. And we'll talk to you on Wednesday. Have a good one, everybody.